Okay, so Anna, you were telling us about some of the difficulties you've been having in Boulder with the flooding.
Yeah. So our basement just got some water, but most of our friends got hit really hard. It's heartbreaking to see that, and yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. There's entire shopping malls completely flooded and filled with mud, and there's
I saw some of the rain maps that said that Boulder got, I mean, areas around Boulder and in Boulder got between 7 and 15 inches of rain.
Right, you got, I think they say 15 inches before Sunday, but then Sunday it rained 2 more inches, so I think it's 17 inches.
Wow.
So especially the Four Mile Canyon with the fire 2 years ago, that was just wild how much there's no buffer off.
Yeah.
Any needles or whatever there was before to soak up the water, and it just came down.
Mm.
Yeah, it was, there were rivers where they've never been before. And all the canyons are closed. I told you I was actually trapped in Estes Park, and they said Estes Park might be for a month not accessible, especially we went out to Rocky Mountain National Park, Trail Ridge Road, back to the other side of the mountain, then around, but that's going to close in a month or so because of snow.
Oh, gosh.
So they said that Boulder
Canyon...
Yeah,
and I remembered... Go ahead.
It's going to be closed for probably a month. And the other canyons up, so I don't think we can go to our cabin anytime soon, are going to be, they said they're going to be closed indefinitely just because
I know
of,
that I drove through Jamestown during the summer up to Susan's wedding, and I saw pictures of that on the news, the devastation there.
Yeah, right. Actually, at Calwood, two classes, elementary school classes, got trapped, too. Like, they weren't in danger, but they flew them out in big military helicopters.
Mm.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot of helicopters flying across.
What? Okay, well, I'm glad that you're safe and your offices seem to be, I mean, you're able to get there, which I wasn't too sure a few days ago whether that was going to be the case.
Right, yeah.
So we've been hearing about the devastation in Boulder from the rain and flooding. Are there other announcements?
Any other, yeah.
Well, I actually do have some good news. We don't have the actual schedules yet for the AGU sessions, the AGU climate literacy sessions, but as many of you know, we'll have 10 oral sessions plus one union oral session plus 6 poster sessions and a workshop. And they are all going to be scheduled on Monday through Wednesday. And they also have made it so that all the climate literacy sessions will be video on demand pending the signature releases of the presenters. And so we're going to be very high profile at this meeting because it'll all be available online. So I don't exactly know how that works yet, but I will find out. I just got that in a voicemail message yesterday. So,
Emma, do you know when the poster session is going to be, which afternoon?
I don't. I am thinking now it's probably going to, given that, unfortunately for you, Anna, I think the union session is going to be Tuesday afternoon. And so I'm thinking the poster session might be Monday afternoon. And that's what I requested, but he didn't say explicitly in his message. So I'm trying to get a little bit more information about that.
Good.
I also requested that while there are 6 poster sessions with respect to the different sessions people applied for, that they'll all be at the same time, and so that we'll have very nice networking session capability, because everybody will be basically at the same place at the same time, or most people will be able to be at the same place at the same time.
Great.
So that's really good. The other thing that I wanted to prompt everybody, I sent an email out yesterday, the NAAAE meeting, the North American Association for Environmental Education, is in a couple of weeks in Baltimore, and I want to put together a flyer from the Clean Network on all the climate literacy sessions, so please forward the information, the title, presenters, time and place, and location to me and to Sarah Hill, and so that we can get that flyer together. So that's the other meeting that's coming up, plus the GSA, which is at the end of the month, but I have no other information about that right now. Okay, so are there any other announcements? Okay, if not, then we'll move on to our presentation. Welcome to the new academic year. This is a first in our presentations during the course of the year. Today we are going to have Emily Teresa Cloyd. Is going to talk to us about the National Climate Assessment and Opportunity for Education. Emily serves as the Public Participation and Engagement Coordinator for the National Climate Assessment. And prior to joining the National Climate Assessment staff, she coordinated carbon cycle and ecosystem research for the USGCRP and served as a Dean John A. Knaus Marine Policy Fellow at NOAA for the sponsored coastal ocean research. She has a master's degree in conservation biology and a bachelor's degree in plant biology, and is currently pursuing her PhD in environmental and natural resources, resources policy. So Emily has posted her slides, as I mentioned before, online on the website, and the link is in the email I sent. The website also has a number of other resources that she's provided links to, so that you can go there and take a look at that. And with that, I will turn it over to you, Emily. People should have her slides. Emily, if you could just say when you're changing slides so that people will know to move to the next slide, that would be helpful.
I will. All right. Well, thank you, and thank you for the invitation to come talk with you today. I'm going to go through my slides. If you have a burning question, go ahead and ask. Otherwise, I have a couple slides in here that ask questions of you all, so those might be sort of a natural point for us to take a break and ask for some questions. So I'm on slide one. You'll see there's a picture of me since we're on the phone. It's always nice to sort of see who it is that's talking to you. Let's go ahead and flip to the first real slide, slide number two. So the U.S. Global Change Research Program was founded in 1990 under the Global Change Research Act to provide for development and coordination of federal research on climate and global change. And so we have 13 federal departments and agencies, plus the Executive Office of the President. And so you can probably pick out your favorite agency there. We have most of the science agencies and departments. And next slide. The strategic plan of the U.S. Global Change Research Program, which came out in the most recent version in 2012, has four goals: to advance science, so studying climate and global change; inform decisions, preparing the nation for change by providing a scientific basis to enable timely decisions on adaptation and mitigation. The third goal is conduct sustained assessments, and under that, assess the climate of the United States and build a sustained capacity to do that. And then our fourth goal is communicate and educate, making our science accessible. And so I'm with the National Climate Assessment, the NCA, so you'll see that starred there. But I think for this group, in addition to that goal, the fourth goal of communicate and educate is also very important. Okay, next slide. So under the Global Change Research Act, Section 106 calls for the National Climate Assessment. It calls for an assessment every 4 years that integrates, evaluates, and interprets the findings of the program, that analyzes the effects of global change on a number of socioeconomic and environmental sectors, and that analyzes current trends in global change and projects major trends for the next 25 to 100 years. Next slide. So under Section 106, we've had two previous national climate assessments. So you'll see our math was a little fuzzy. We didn't quite hit that every 4-year mark. The first one came in 2000. and the second one in 2009. And so the next one, which we're currently in the process of writing, we will have out early in 2014. So it will be delivered to the government later this year, and then the government will do their review, and it will be out hopefully next March. So with this new national climate assessment, what we're really trying to do is provide information about climate science and climate change impacts on the U.S., but also enhance the ability of our nation to anticipate, mitigate, and adapt to changes in the global environment. And so the vision for the assessment is really having an inclusive, broad-based, and sustained process to assess and communicate scientific knowledge about impacts, risks, and vulnerabilities associated with climate change. So next slide, I'm now on slide 7. So our goals for the National Climate Assessment are to have it be not just a report, but actually a sustained process that will inform an integrated research program, the Global Change Research Program. We're developing new approaches to develop and use scenarios at multiple scales, from local to regional to national. We're also, for the first time, having a systematic evaluation of the implications of adaptation and mitigation options, so looking at what's already in place and what plans are for continuing adaptation and mitigation into the future. And then finally, community building within regions and sectors. So helping to build the regional and the national networks, the sectoral networks, to talk about and use information about climate change. Next slide. So our outcomes are an ongoing, relevant, and highly credible analysis and assessment of our understanding of climate change, enhanced and timely access to assessment-related data, a systematic evaluation of progress towards reducing risk, vulnerability, and impacts, and a system of national indicators of change and our capacity to respond that will really help us see where we are, how the climate is changing, where we are on responding to those changes. Next slide. So this diagram gives you a little bit of an idea of what the structure of the assessment is. And so at the top, we have the Executive Office of the President and the Office of Science and Technology Policy within that office. And the Office of Science and Technology Policy chairs the National Science and Technology Council. One of the committees of that, then, is the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, and Sustainability, or CENRS. A subcommittee of that is the Subcommittee on Global Change Research, which are the principals, the agency representatives to the United States Global Change Research Program. As a part of that program, we have an interagency working group made up of the 13 agencies of the USCCRP, plus additional agencies that are interested in assessment. So we have over 20 active members of that group, and they've been leading the formulation of the climate assessment since early 2010. And so those are the folks that are most closely connected to our federal government stakeholders. The assessment itself is within USGCRP. We have about 10 staff at our office here in Washington, D.C. There's also a technical support unit run by NOAA at the National Climatic Data Center in Asheville. They also have about 10 staff, and those folks work on things like getting scenarios together, as well as on the technical work of putting together the assessment document, doing the sort of technical support for website and interactive PDF generation, graphics, all sorts of things like that. The assessment has a federal advisory committee, the National Climate Assessment and Development Advisory Committee, or NACADAC. That is a 60-member committee with 44 non-federal members representing public, private, and academic sectors, as well as federal ex officio members representing 16 departments, agencies, and Executive Office of the President. The Federal Advisory Committee was responsible for selecting the chapter author teams for the assessment, and the Advisory Committee also has several working groups that take on things like engagement and communication, scenario development, looking at ways to create a sustained assessment process, and other things. And then the third, the other thing you'll see here, the purple boxes for NCANET, which is our network of partners, mostly outside of the federal government, that help connect us to a broad range of audiences, stakeholders, and contributors to the assessment. And so I'm going to talk a little bit more about NCANET in a while. But NCANET is our major mechanism for coordinating with folks outside of the government about the assessment.
I'll also mention that I think that the Mark McCaffrey has started an affiliate group with NCA through that mechanism for education.
I'm going to talk about that. Yep.
Okay, great.
But yes, there is a specific portion of NCANET focusing on education. So our process to date, we've had a number of process-focused workshops that helped us establish the methodologies and approaches to actually doing the assessment. And so you'll see the reports of those workshops focused on things like data and information management, how to do assessments, how to build our systems of indicators, modeling, downscaling scenarios, valuation, things like that. We also had regional and sectoral workshops that were convened by agency-sponsored technical input teams, and those workshops were really meant to provide some of the technical background and foundational material used in the assessment. And then we also had a number of listening sessions and symposia from 2010 forward that were really meant to focus in on what aspects were most important for us to assess, and how do we engage with different communities. All right, next slide. We also had a request for information in 2011 that resulted in over 250 technical inputs that included new regional climate histories and projections, new sea level rise scenarios, as well as in-depth foundational assessments for each region and most sectors. And so you'll see on the right of this slide a picture of the Pacific Islands Technical Input Report, and Island Press is actually publishing revised versions of most of the regional technical inputs. You can find those on the Climate Adaptation Knowledge Exchange webpage under NCA Reports, and so you can see that address there. We also have a number of federal agency-sponsored reports that are available on our website. And then the regional climatologies and projections that are available on scenarios.globalchange.gov. We had a 3-month-long public comment period on our draft report where we collected over 4,000 public comments on the report as a whole, as well as on specific chapters. And the author teams and NACADAC Federal Advisory Committee are revising the report in response to those comments, as well as in response to a second round of review where agencies reviewed the report and the National Research Council did a second review of the report over the last month or so. And so we're in the process of responding to those comments, revising the draft. And next slide, you'll see a representation of our process. And so, as I said, we started with those technical inputs. Those went to chapter author teams who delivered a first draft of their chapters in the summer of 2012. The Federal Advisory Committee then worked across those draft chapters to put together a full draft report in late 2012 that went out for public comment early in 2013. So we're currently in the revision process, and the Federal Advisory Committee expects to deliver a revised report to the government this fall. Once the government has that report, it will go through agency and White House review, and then the third National Climate Assessment report, will be released in March of 2014. So next slide. The next few slides, what I'm going to do is just show you some information from our draft assessment report so you can get an idea of what some of the key messages look like, and perhaps this will help you see or think about where the opportunities for education might lie. So the draft report is still available online at ncadac.globalchange.gov. Next slide. So first you'll see the outline for the report. So we have the letter to the American people and the executive summary, which during the draft review period were probably the most quoted items out of the climate assessment. Then we have chapters on climate science, on various sectors and sectoral crosscuts, and on each of the regions and biogeographical crosscuts, three chapters on responses to climate change, on decision support, on mitigation, and on adaptation, an agenda for climate change science and research, a chapter on our sustained assessment, and then some appendices of commonly asked questions and some expanded climate science information. So next slide, I'm now on 15. So you'll see here the list of sectors. These sectors are primarily the ones found in the Global Change Research Act. So water, energy, transportation, agriculture, forestry, ecosystems, human health. Next slide, we also had a number of sectoral crosscuts. So how do those sectors interact? What are important ways of looking at climate change and climate change impacts? And so we have these cross-cutting chapters that talk about things like water, energy, and land use, urban systems, the impacts of climate change on tribal, indigenous, and native lands and resources, land use and land cover change, rural communities, and biogeochemical cycles. Next slide. The report also talks about climate change in eight regions of the United States, so you'll see on the map what those regions are, and then in two biogeographical crosscuts, so one on coast development and ecosystems, and one on oceans and marine resources. And so those chapters are, they really drill down to what people might be seeing in the places where they live. So next slide. As I said, the draft report is still available online. You can get, you can download the entire draft report, which might take a while, or individual chapters that are most interesting for you. There are 11 overarching report findings, and then each chapter begins with about 3 to 5 key messages. And then at the end of the chapter, there are traceable accounts that provide additional detail about the process that author teams use to come to their conclusions and write their chapters, supporting information for those key messages, and information about confidence and uncertainty. The chapters discuss climate change impacts on the region or sector within a risk-based framework, which is hopefully a way that will help people better think about climate change and sort of what it might mean for them. And then the chapters on responses really delve into some examples, frameworks, and progress on planning and implementing responses to climate change. So, next slide. I'm going to go through these very quickly. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the draft findings, but what I do want to do is just have you see what our draft findings are sort of looking like, and so you can sort of see what you might or what we have to contend with as we think about how do we translate what's in the NCA report for various audiences. And so just very quickly, slide 19 are the first three draft report findings. Climate is changing. Extreme weather and climate events have increased in recent decades. There's new and stronger evidence that many of these increases are related to human activity. Human-induced climate change is projected to continue. Next slide. And so we also have a number of graphics in the report. So this is one that we have gotten a lot of comments that people like that it sort of synthesizes things, and so you'll see 10 indicators of a warming world. Continuing to the next slide, impacts related to climate change are already evident in many sectors. Climate change threatens human health and well-being in a number of ways. Next slide. Infrastructure is being adversely affected by phenomena associated with climate change. The reliability of water supplies is being reduced by climate change in many regions. Next slide. Adverse impacts to crops and livestock over the next years are expected. over the next 25 years, the agriculture sector is projected to be relatively resilient. Natural ecosystems are being directly affected by climate change. You'll see the graphic here talks about the black, which are observed impacts, and the white, which are projected impacts on various species. Next slide. Life in the oceans is changing, and planning for adaptation and mitigation is increasing, but progress with implementation is limited. And you'll see on the right some figures just showing some adaptation possibilities and ecosystem restoration activities that are taking place. So next slide, slide 25, just giving you a sample of what some of the sectoral key messages look like. I picked out the urban chapter. So you can see, you know, the key messages are right now kind of long and very, very specific to a particular sector. If we go to the next slide, you'll see what the key messages look like for a region, for the Midwest. So you'll see things like longer growing seasons, rising carbon dioxide levels that could increase yields of some crops, but benefits may be offset by other extreme events. You know, the composition of forests is expected to change. Next slide, continuing with those key messages, things about heat wave intensity, highly energy-intensive economy that might impact the way that climate changes happen, things like extreme rainfall events and flooding that have increased, and the fact that climate change could exacerbate a wide range of risks to the Great Lakes. So next slide, you'll see, again, the examples of response messages. So I picked out here for adaptation. You can see, you know, the chapter will include some tables that show examples of non-governmental adaptation efforts and services, examples of things going on in the government. But again, you know, if you look at these key messages, they're fairly long. What I'm trying to do here, like I said, I'm not trying to give you every single key message, but just help you see sort of what the key messages might look like coming out of the assessment. And so if we go to the next slide, what I want to point out is that although the final report won't come out until March of 2014, media and many organizations are already taking note of the contents of the draft report, and people are beginning to use this to talk about climate change in their communities. And so certainly there are opportunities for education once the final report comes out, but you know, in terms of the draft, the cat's already out of the bag and people are using it. So, you know, if we go to the next slide, which is slide 30, once the final report comes out, it will come out as an interactive PDF with an accompanying printed summary document of about 80 pages. Both of those will have links to the first stage of the Global Change Information System, which is an online system that will provide access to the underlying information and analyses used in the report. So provide access to data sets. It will provide enhanced graphics, interactive graphics, in some cases visualizations that have been put together to show how this happened over time. And the report will really be the foundation for communication products and processes that will hopefully be useful to a variety of audiences. And so some other products we're expecting to come out include two-page handouts for each region and sector, and then other things like videos, social media, and other shareable materials. And so, you know, in thinking about how, yeah.
This is Frank. Just a quick question for you. You'd mentioned that people are already beginning to use the content of the National Climate Assessment
yep.
in their programs, activity, what the whole range of possible uses. But, I would imagine you would agree that while you're developing materials based on the draft, that you would want to come back in and update those materials with the finalized language, conclusions, and all that kind of stuff. Because they are likely to change at some level Is that a proper way of looking at it?
Yes, that is definitely proper. And so if we go to the next slide, to slide 31, you know, thinking about what's going on now and what will happen in March as opportunities for education. As you said, many folks are already using findings from the draft report. And it's out there. It's a public document. It is a draft. It is not a final product. But, you know, there is the opportunity now to start translating some of those report findings, report content, with the expectation that once the final report comes out in March, you may need to go back and do additional updating to materials. But there's the opportunity to do things like connecting report findings to existing educational standards, like the Next Generation Science Standards. You know, that's the sort of work that can begin now. Certainly the report findings and the chapters themselves will change a bit between what was posted in the draft and what comes out in the final. But I don't think that they're going to change so radically that, you know, the work done now would be wasted. It should be, the changes should be in line with, you know, somebody could create, you know, start work now and then update rather than having to go back to the drawing board.
Am I correct in thinking, along those lines, I mean, when we were concerned when we had the last round of comments on the Next Generation Science Standards, there were dramatic changes from before to after, and part of that was the pressure to reduce the number of standards, but that kind of constraint is not one that's here. Am I thinking this correctly, or are there other pressures
right
on this? Okay, good.
Yeah, if, you know, at our last Federal Advisory Committee meeting, at our last in-person one in July, they actually talked about expanding the number of findings, so going from 11 findings to 12.
Okay.
So, you know, I know that there are a number of issues with having that many findings, but at this point, you know, we're trying to keep the report from ballooning unmanageably, but we're not necessarily trying to cut down the amount of information. If anything, we're adding additional information.
Emily, another question for you. Did you already talk about the extra effort that this assessment is doing different than the IPCC on translation, you know, building on the work of Susan Joy Hassell and other people to really language more for non-technical audiences? I mean, have you talked about that at all? Because that's a really key piece of this additional work, that the National Climate Assessment is different than the IPCC, and this is one
right
of those key differences.
Yeah, so with IPCC, most of you know that the IPCC has a summary for policymakers, which is still a fairly hefty document for each of their working groups, but the reports themselves are highly technical. The National Climate Assessment, what comes out of the assessment is all written for a general audience. The primary science editor for the report, as Frank said, is Susan Hassell, and she has been working with the chapter authors to make sure that the reports, that the chapters themselves are as accessible as possible, really trying to work things to be written for a fairly educated but general audience. You know, perhaps, you know, thinking about, like, what is a high school standard of reading rather than a university professor level or academic journal level of writing and reading. So already they really are trying to make that quite readable. And then the two-page handouts and then the summary document or highlights document will be written for hopefully an even more accessible way. All the information in those documents will be entirely derivative of the report. It's not going to change anything or introduce new things, but again, will be written for hopefully in a very accessible way. So those two-page handouts that I talked about really are meant to be something that could be used for all sorts of purposes, a variety of audiences. So, what I've put up here, unfortunately, the links are bright blue, so they're a little bit hard to see. But as was mentioned earlier, our network of partners, NCANET, does have an affinity group focusing on education, and I have another slide a little bit later talking a little bit more about that group specifically. But we had someone here in the office who was working on education and ways that educators might use the assessment, and so she developed some ideas for discussion in that NCANET education group and in NCANET more generally. And so you'll see links to the two presentations that she put together about things that NCANET could do, that educators might do, ways that they might use the assessment, and also some caveats, things like your key messages are very long and, you know, how can we think about the best way that they could be translated, shortened, et cetera. This is the first place that we pause to, you know, think about what are some of the opportunities for education. I've got another place in a little bit. But why don't I just take a moment, and if folks have questions that have popped up in this first two-thirds or so of my presentation, ask away.
Well, this is Tamara. One of the key pieces, I think, is this, the second bullet you have here, which is connecting the report findings to the next generation science standards. And there's a lot of potential there, and we're planning to do that for the clean collection. But there's also an opportunity. Since the next generation science standards ask teachers to teach in a radically new way in terms of integrating science and engineering practices and cross-cutting practices into their teaching, and climate change is a perfect example of an opportunity to feature that kind of teaching. So I think those kinds of connections are a place that is really a good point of leverage.
Mm-hmm.
So that was more of a comment than a question.
Yeah, and so one of the things that Carla did when she was here, she looked at the next generation science standards and just tried to do a very high-level analysis of where did climate show up, where are the opportunities to talk about climate within those. And so the presentations do have a little bit of that discussion already, that, you know, so that initial piece of work is done, and, you know, the next opportunity is, okay, how do we build on that and actually make those connections?
Emily, when was that work done? The connection between, or the initial, in May?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so she was here for 3 weeks in May. Carla is a professor at Savannah State University. So she was up here on a short-term teaching release and really looking at how educators could connect to the assessment.
Is there a thought to having some of these graphics that will be in the report available separately so that they're easily integrated into lessons?
Yes, yeah. So, and we have done that for the previous assessments as well, is, made, whether it's just PowerPoint slides that have the graphics on them, or we have an image library that's a part of U.S. Global Change Research Program. So they'll definitely be available probably in a few different ways so that people can find them through the Global Change Information System, through NCANET, through other connections.
Because another thing we could think about trying to do is to put the, since we have a review criteria in CLEAN for visualizations, we could even jumpstart that process and try to review some of those graphics right into the CLEAN collection.
Yeah. So, Tamara, you're building on an idea that I'm having here, because I don't know in your process, Emily, Susan Joy Hassell's work as an editor is text-based, but who's doing that role for the visualizations? Because what Tamara just mentioned could help make these more usable upstream from publication. There's this idea that we have in the CLEAN process of an iterative review where you kind of have a draft version reviewed, got some user community and development community feedback back to the developer prior to finalization, so that there's a way of improving the quality of the product before it's finalized, which is much easier than afterward. Is that something that there's a way or a person to connect to talk through?
Susan has also been quite involved in the graphics process. As have other folks down at NCDC. They're the ones who are doing a lot of the graphics work. The graphics have been very heavily discussed among a number of folks, chapter authors, people like Susan, and the folks who are actually trying to build the graphics. And I know we got a lot of comments, too, about the graphics during the comment period.
So I guess just to push it a little bit further, Emily, the part of the CLEAN network, there are some really talented people who work in this space that are part of this network and part of groups that have those people that, getting some of that feedback, that's kind of what the CLEAN process is, a community review. And then ultimately the final decision is with the root developer. I could see something like that. I'm not committing to this, but I'm just saying conceptually I could see something like that working in this context to make it a higher quality, much more usable product for, our initiatives and other like initiatives.
And what Frank is referring to is not just the scientific accuracy, but it is really the educational, making them really usable in educational contexts.
I wanted to chime in here. I'm Anna Gold, and I'm managing the CLEAN process. We're actually in a very good phase right now. If you wanted to pilot this on just a few graphics to see what you get back from us and just see how this works, it would be an easy time right now to for you to send me some of the graphics, and we could get those through review and see if you think that would be a valuable process.
Well, at this point, the final wrap-up on the report are, before they get delivered to the government, are taking place in the next couple weeks. So I think it's a little late in the process for that. I said, we had a lot of comments on the graphics, and so they've undergone a lot of work to make them more comprehensible to folks.
Emily, a lot of people is one thing, and I don't mean to be a nit here, but those a lot of people are, this is complicated information, and it's
right.
We found in our CLEAN process there are a lot of well-meaning products that really fall short on the comprehensibility part, but they're scientifically accurate. If you're telling me that the process is done, these graphics aren't going to change from like 2 weeks from now forward, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think most of the changes that would take place on the graphics have, for the most part, taken place. you know, we had discussions already about them, and at this point the report is almost ready to be handed off to the government.
So, Emily, this is Anita Davis. Hey, I'm wondering, since you're talking about this as being a sustained effort rather than just sort of a document that gets put out, might there be room for additional graphics to be developed through this sustained effort?
Yeah.
Because I agree with these folks in that educators are really kind of a different group, and the groups that I work with, which are more informal educators, can be even different still. And it would be really useful to have, I know I hear a lot from people, you know, can we get a graphic of thus and such? And it's not something that would be like a data set that NASA can provide, but the NCA might be in a really good position to put out some things that would be graphics of things like processes, for example, are really hard to come by, you know, and I could see that being extremely helpful for the entire education community. So is there a way to maybe fold that into the sort of longer-term work?
Yes, and so actually if we go through the rest of my slides, so if we go to the next slide now, which will be 32, I think this is a good bridge to talking about that sustained assessment process and thinking about, knowing that what we have for the third National Climate Assessment Report is very close to being, you know, locked in by the Federal Advisory Committee for what goes forward to the government. But this is not the end of the process. And, we can certainly create new things, revise things, make them more comprehensible as a part of the sustained assessment process. And so I think thinking about that can be a useful avenue, even if we can't do a lot of work on some of the graphics that people might not have as their favorites for what comes out.
But one of the things is, but what it sounds like what we could potentially do is we could start looking at the ones that are going to be in this report that's being handed off to the government, but that our review process could suggest the kinds of changes that would make them more useful to education.
Yes, yes. And so if we go to slide 33, so why do we want to have a sustained assessment process? Why do we want to have special reports activities between now and then the next assessment report, presumably 4 years from now? Help deepen understanding of climate change through better translation, better graphics. It also gives us an opportunity to investigate new scientific issues of concern, build our capacity to conduct more sophisticated, useful, and credible assessments, better support decisions, better teach about climate change, and then enable a full review of issues of national importance in an efficient and credible way. So next slide. We have a new special report on sustained assessment that just came out at the beginning of the month, actually last week. And so it was approved by the Federal Advisory Committee last week. It's available. The version that's currently available is still a pre-publication version, so, you know, please excuse minor typographical errors and things like that. But the pieces of that sustained assessment special report that I think might be of particular interest to this group are critical elements 1 and 4. So the first one, establish mechanisms to support enduring collaborative partnerships that sustain assessment activities. And then critical element 4, diversifying the resource base and setting priorities. The other critical elements talk about enhancing and organizing scientific foundations and providing the infrastructure to support the sustained assessment process. So if we go to the next slide, you'll see sort of how this all fits together. We have foundational reports, we have improved science, special topics reports, technical inputs, connecting to and building networks. I think another arrow in here could be, translation of and increasing knowledge of four particular fields, like education, but really improving our capacity for assessment, for adaptation, for services, with the quadrennial assessment reports really becoming sort of like a cross-cut or a time slice through all of the activities of the sustained assessment process. And so if we go to the next slide, really thinking about how do we build our engagement and communication capacity. So where do we find the human capital to take on these activities? We have, as I said, a working group of our federal advisory committee that works on engagement and communications. We have myself at the NCA as staff, and then we have all of our partners in the NCA network. And those are folks that can connect us beyond just engagement and communication to things like education. The sorts of activities that we've already done include things like having our website, having newsletters about the assessment, Federal Register notices asking for comments on our approach and topics, requests for information that led to that technical inputs, the process methodology and topical workshops, the listening sessions and presentations at meetings and conferences. We've had regional town hall meetings to discuss draft report and building future assessment capacity, and we'll do additional rollouting engagement around the release of the final report that will start to segue into the sustained assessment report, the sustained assessment process, new reports, new activities. And so this is as we had the process methodology and topical workshops that fed into the third national climate assessment, one thing to think about is there a way to do that sort of methodology survey around topics in education, and can that feed into the sustained assessment process? And so if we go to the next slide, slide 37, I talk a little bit more about that NCA network, our partners in assessment. And so this is our network of organizations that extend the assessment process and products to various members and stakeholders and really build that long-term capacity to conduct and use assessments. So we're trying to cultivate partnerships with organizations that can be a part of that sustained assessment process, that can provide capacity that we don't necessarily have in this office to do a lot of the work around assessment, who may be the trusted voices or the people who are experts in a particular method or a particular area and can be, can carry the assessment forward. And so the network is also a way to organize access to the assessment process and products and to create relationships with other organizations interested in climate change, to share ideas and best practices across those organizations and disciplines, and then collaborate on products and activities that translate the assessment for a variety of audiences. So next slide just gives you a little bit more facts about NCANET. We have over 90 partner organizations ranging from professional societies to academic institutions and consortia, NGOs, local and state government departments, and folks from the private sector. And so if you go to the NCANET website, you can find who the partners are, what sorts of activities they're doing, information about our monthly conversations, our affinity groups model, including the education affinity group, and then a toolkit of materials related to the U.S. Global Change Research Program and the NCA. So on the next slide, I talk more about specifically the education affinity group, which is being led by Mark McCaffrey at NCSE. It currently has about 20 members representing NGOs, universities, and government, and it meets about monthly. So their next meeting is, that's not correct, it's not September 28th. I apologize, that's a typographical error on my part.
I have it on the underneath the... underneath Emily's slides on the website, I put the note from Mark, which had the date and time, the link to the website, and also the link to the Google Doc with the minutes from the last discussion.
Yep. Yes, so it's actually September 26th at 2 p.m. I apologize for that error. And so you can see the link here. And so the purpose of the Education Affinity Group is basically to talk about education ideas, tactics, and materials that support the use of the assessment, help address gaps and deficiencies relative to education. You've named several already today. And then report back to the broader group on progress on education-related activities and coordinate with other non-NCNet education-related efforts. And so...
Okay, and I'll also mention that I've been actually part of these discussions. This is Tamara. And I've talked to Mark, and we will be integrating every once in a while. We will coincide there the Education Affinity Group discussions with the CLEAN Network. So those of you who might want to participate, that will be an avenue to have your voices heard.
Yes. And so go ahead.
This is Frank. As co-chair of the Communication and Education IWG, part of my responsibility is the federal contributions to the rollout, and then also the sustained engagement, not just the initial engagement, but the sustained engagement. And obviously, education is a critical component of that. So that's part of the for those of you in the federal thinking space, it's the FY15 is really where. You know, 6 months after the release is where that's going to really be hitting hard, not you know, at the rollout per se, because most education systems aren't able to ingest something new in that, you know, that quickly. It's going to be probably the September after is really when we're going to be hitting the formal education systems much more robustly.
Yeah. So if we go to the next slide, which is slide 40. This is just, you know, the Sustained Assessment Special Report suggests a special report on an assessment of American attitudes, effective communication, and education regarding climate change. So that's one opportunity is how does education fit into that? But are there other places, are there things like a workshop about education related to the NCA that need, you know, that could be a part of the broader sort of process and methodology development for the sustained assessment process? How do we include education in future synthesis reports rather than as a sort of, here's the report, now education community go out and do something with it? Is there a way to more formally include education and education concepts in developing the report?
Well, I've worked with people in which, in trying to engage in a robust way, this interaction between the scientific and educational communities, and I think that there's probably opportunities here to identify some of the people involved in developing the assessment report who are more on the technical science side, who are interested in getting that message out and facilitating. It does take facilitation, but getting those people and the educators working together to move that forward. And I'd be happy to talk through those kind of possibilities at some point.
So Tamara, building on what you said, one of the early inside baseball tells here is the interest in citizen science as a contribution to the assessment process, meaning adding data sets, adding findings, adding what they call gray literature in through the citizen science process. So that is one of the areas that I'm required to work on. If there are others who got a lot more on that than me, I'm just a facilitator, not a doer. So, but that's just giving you some sense of one of the early signs of where that connection can happen.
Hi, Frank. This is Jeff Haynes-Stiles. I've been listening in on this call. I was also in the webinar that the NCA folks had about 6 months ago, and at that time I asked whether citizen science was going to be a resource that would be tapped for the sustained assessments, as it seems to be a very, very good way of both engaging communities and actually gathering data that is more diverse and more current than some of the more academically oriented things. And it seemed as if most of the people on that call didn't actually know what citizen science in the contemporary sense really meant. And I just did a quick search in the document that was passed out. I don't see citizen science referenced in there even once. The word citizen appears three times, but not citizen science. So I just endorse that idea that citizen science is an incredible resource for the sustained assessment, and it would be really good to have that prominently on the agenda.
I agree. There are a number of groups in NCANET that are interested in citizen science, groups like the National Phenology Network and, you know, obviously, but many others. And so there is definitely a conversation going on around what role citizen science already plays, but maybe is not touted as citizen science. And then how can citizen science be more prominently a part of the NCA process?
We're flagging areas for further conversation. And I guess, you know, given we're running out of our time, if not already ran out, so as a community, we understand where that conversation extends is into the affinity group that Mark's leading, and then possibly times when it connects back to the CLEAN network. Is that the kind of current play?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I've talked with Mark about finding opportunities where interests of his group can interact and get input from and have participation from the CLEAN network. So I think that's a very good way of.
Yeah, can you hear me? This is Mark.
Yes, I can hear you.
There he is.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, I've been listening in. I guess I muted myself so I couldn't actually be heard. But and I know that we're basically out of time, but for everyone that's interested, please join us on the 26th of September at 2 o'clock Eastern, 11 o'clock Pacific, to continue this discussion. And one of the dilemmas that we've talked to Emily about is the fact that because we won't have a chance to look at the final report or any of the visualizations, et cetera, until after it's released, we have to work between now and then on kind of a parallel track. But we do know, you know, the general structure, the chapter titles and so forth. And even from this discussion today, it's clear that there's some opportunities like citizen science in particular that we should really stress. And so the more we can kind of organize ourselves and identify, you know, key resources and strategies and so forth that we can then have waiting in the wings when the report comes out, you know, as Frank was talking about, a lot of the push will be in the fall of 2014. And so we'll have some time after the report is released, and maybe if we beat the bushes, we can find some funding, too, to really put together an incredible resource so that we can maximize this opportunity to use the National Climate Assessment as a whole series of sort of teachable moments, you know, particularly in terms of demystifying how the research is conducted and providing that local view of what's happening with climate change and what people can do to prepare for it and to minimize the impacts.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks. Yeah. Mark, I have posted the information about the Education Affinity Group on the CLEAN Network website under today's telecon, so people can get to that there. Emily, thank you very much for your presentation today. It was very interesting, and I hope to have more conversations with you and with the rest of your group on this. All right. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, all.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Emily.